Hello and welcome to another episode of Risking Failure. I'm your co-host Mick Dunn, and the other co-host on the other side of the planet, Mr. Mark Dobson. How are you, mate?
Mate, I am smashingly well. We're co-hosts. I thought you were the host and I was the co-host.
Nah, we're partners in crime, but I do owe you an apology, mate, because I left you hanging last week a couple of times.
Yeah, at the end of the episode, you mean? Yes. The end of the episode. I couldn't believe you were just... I do appreciate that it's like midnight or something when you're recording at your end, or maybe not like that, but and you've got a couple of kids and you're a bit tired. I kept on saying things. You just left me hanging over and over.
I did. You know, I was having one of those, you know, when you're in these conversations and then like once it happened once, then it was as though every time there was a silence and it was like you were going in the same direction with each thing and I just felt like I needed to fill in something. I had nothing I could give you and it just turned it into this like giggle thing. You know, when you just can't stop laughing. And so I just, it was just funny.
Oh, mate, don't worry. People will see that as like a chemistry between us. They'll be like, oh, those two, geez, they bounce so well off each other. If Mick would just hit the ball back sometimes, they'd be an awesome team. So, no, that's all right. And I'm not sure if we've put the outtakes up yet. I think this will come out after the outtakes. It's only about 6 minutes of us messing around on the side, balls ups. And I generally think it's, yeah, you've left me hanging a fair bit.
Well, we haven't really talked about outtakes before, but you've been working on some outtakes. Maybe we've talked about it, but you've been actually pining through a little bit of stuff and some of the content that, you know, we either haven't released or just, you know, never got to previous stuff. We've got that condensed into, what, a 5-6 minute...
Yeah, there's 6 minutes of outtakes that are coming, and it's really just so people can see the kind of crap that I have to put up with, which doesn't go to air. And some people will have heard the lines off other episodes, but I haven't gone through all of it. I just went through about 4 episodes. That was enough for me to laugh my ass off, but also just realize, yeah, Mark, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job working with Mick. You just keep hanging yourself out there. Keep being vulnerable. Keep setting yourself up for failure, Mark, every episode. But anyway, so, well, all right, what's next on the schedule?
Yeah, speaking of putting yourself out there, we heard from one of our tribe members this week. It's a good friend of ours. Matt Strudwick. Struddy sent us a voicemail double. Have you heard it or should I share it with you?
I have heard it. The listeners need to hear it. But it is cool because he went to our webpage, which it's relevant to. I saw that you could press record on the webpage, but I just thought it was some sort of like wank or bling. I didn't know that it actually works. I heard it. No, I'm happy for you to play it. Let's play it for the listeners.
Absolutely. Here we go.
Mick, Dobbo, Struddy. Just been listening to the recent episodes. I'm not quite all the way through it. Don't have enough time, you know. Very topical. But I had a bit of a problem with the opening where Dobbo basically took to Mick on the website. Don't think it's that bad. So I've got off my butt. I've gone onto Facebook, not a very common thing for me to do, and I've started a little award. It's the websites that are so much worse than the riskingfailure.com award. So get your friends behind it. Get everyone excited because I think there's some crap out there, and Mick's done a great job of getting something off the ground really quickly. So loving the podcast, boys. Keep up the good work, and miss you both. So, yeah.
I got to tell you, I was rapt to at least get a little feedback that I didn't think I was doing that bad of a job on the website. I thought I'd done a pretty cracking job.
Well, the first website just had this black heading, so there's new artwork up there, so it's better. And I love that Struddy also says, I miss you guys at the end. I'm like, Struddy, you live around the corner. Like, it's not like, you know, we're separated by a war or something. You could probably just, you know, touch base. You know, you give us a call, shoot us a text message. And he has. So I haven't gone and checked out the other websites yet. But I did look at the website. It's looking better. It is good, but there's some pretty good websites out there. It's better now that the black's not across the top. So I do think there is merit in this award for the worst website. I'm happy for his initiative. Until I see a worse one, we still own the worst website on the planet.
Well, I think you need to go to Facebook because Struddy did post a cracker of a website on there. I opened it up. I was definitely kind of taken aback when I opened it up. So if you haven't seen it, you want to go to the Facebook page. I actually went and started doing a hunt, and I actually found one called the worst website of all time.com or something like that. That's got a perfect example of all the absolute worst things you could do to a website. So if you've got a bad website you want to post and share with the community, then jump on. And let's rally around it and see what great ideas we can come to make ours even worse or better. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, look, today's topic, because I'm under the pump for time today, I've just got no time, Nick. Now, I've got a meeting a bit later in the day. And what we're discussing is, because this keeps coming up in meetings all week, and I didn't realize that people didn't know it. I don't know if I didn't know it. But it's a theme called positioning, and it's understanding how we can have more than one or two options in any situation we're in, particularly in relationships, but just generally. How can we have more options available to us to handle a situation? An easy way to think about positioning is when you are selling your house or going to sell a business or even pitch an idea, what you usually do is you sort of position yourself to be attractive to the market. So you position your house as being close to schools, close to public transport, that sort of thing. Or you say, look, rural, great getaway, and you call it a getaway. Or you might call it a renovator's dream, right? Which is like the house that I've lived in most of my life. Now, we position ourselves to create an opportunity for someone to sort of go, yeah, that's me. I want to slide into that. And it creates the opportunity for that other person to move towards you and have a relationship. In business, we do the same thing. We position our business so it owns a particular part of the market or so that people can see it's an opportunity for growth, say. Now, when it comes to people, what usually happens is whenever we're in a situation, we usually position ourselves to be either, say, a victim when something happens we don't like. We're like, oh, it's not fair, poor me. Or sometimes we position ourselves to be the strength, as in, well, I'll just tell them. And when we've only got one or two ways that we are comfortable positioning ourselves and we don't have the awareness of other ways, it limits the number of ways or the number of outcomes that you have available to you. And sometimes in a point of conflict, it's an interesting opportunity to see how you could position yourself, because when we're having conflict, sometimes we think it's happening to us. Sometimes we think, well, I shouldn't have done that. Or sometimes there's this huge amount of uncertainty and sometimes we run away and we're silent or we dive in a hurry. But if we were to position ourselves in the same situation, say as a friend, or we position ourselves as a facilitator, what we start to do is we start to take actions from, well, how would a friend handle this situation if I wasn't in conflict with them, if they were a colleague or somebody I loved? Or what if I looked at the situation as if I was a facilitator and I was like, well, I'm going to navigate this and get everybody to come together. Where sometimes we position ourselves to be stubborn or standoffish. So I just wanted to throw this idea out here because it's one of the, I found I usually refer to it as, who are you being? Meaning you're being friendly, you're being warm, you're being a leader, you're being a follower, you're being a victim. And there's some more subtleties off that when you really workshop it. But I found that being was a bit too broad and positioning was a better way to put it. So I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not sure if you've heard that idea before or if it makes sense. Like, I didn't give Mick any warning that we were doing this, but positioning's the theme for the day.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I hear you talk about it, what springs to mind to me is actually, well, potentially business relationships, and noticing that actually now that you're talking about it, there's probably a strategic partnership, I guess. Like, I've had some companies that seem like they're doing stuff that would make sense to align, you know, like we do this and you do that and we should work together to do more of what we both do by kind of partnering up. And it sort of seems like most of the time that doesn't work. If that doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, I think, mostly because of that positioning. They're either trying to be the solution and we're trying to be the resource. That's what I feel like I run into the most, is where I feel like if I were to clash, I feel like I'm more interested in being a resource than a problem solver, so to speak. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And there are times to make the shift. And the times to make the shift where it's most potent is often when there's a moment of challenge or conflict, or there's an awkwardness, or there's a standoff nature in communication, or there's that time when everybody's staring at a problem and nobody wants to step forward. And not that you have to step forward, but we can position ourselves as a resource, say, or position ourselves as a problem solver. But then when a problem comes up or everybody's trying to solve it, sometimes we need to position ourselves as a follower in that time or as a listener. So the power of this is really in the subtlety, in the smaller moments, not necessarily in the big moments, not necessarily in the brand of your company or the style of your leadership, although it's relevant, but it's, can you do that in tough moments? So when you talk about the resource or the problem solver, you could do that from a company level and you could do it as a one-on-one or at a moment-to-moment level as well. So which one were you referring to, like company or moment-to-moment, do you think?
A little bit of both, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I think what...
Thank you for your honesty. That's really good.
Well, what I think is that it... You caught me off guard now, Dover. Don't give me a repeat of last week, mate. It's these kinds of comments. Now I'm like, now I'm being defensive about, not defensive, but now I'm being analytical about my own response. So we're going to have to move on because you've killed it.
How are you positioning yourself? All right, I'll go back to the question. The question was, when you're talking about positioning, were you talking about as a company or are you talking about moment to moment?
Well, I was thinking a little bit about both, but I sort of feel like it's the moment to moment that gives you that feeling that it's not right. Like the positioning that you have with somebody else, if it's in a relationship, for example, it's those interactions on a moment to moment basis that tend to kind of give you that instinct over whether the company or the relationship is positioned right. So I'm thinking moment to moment. I guess I would say I'm thinking moment to moment.
Moment to moment is where the power is. But typically when we're in a difficult situation, it's normal to have a habit of positioning ourselves consistently in the same sort of way, in that angry or too hard basket or stuff them they can wait or, well, it's not my responsibility. That's an easy way to position. And in relationships, we do it too. As soon as there's some sort of conflict, you're like, oh, stuff, they can, you know, well, it's not all about them, you know. We sort of make a stand, if you like. What I think is important is, one, to recognize where we normally go wrong on this. What we normally do is we usually try to work out, what should I do to handle it? What should my response be? What should I do? Literally, what should I do? And when we ask that question, we can come up with some unhealthy answers. But if we go back to some of the stuff we talked about in earlier episodes about who are we being and choosing an identity, if I'm a healthy person and I go to the fridge, I'm going to pull out an apple. If I'm an unhealthy person, I'm going to pull out the ice cream or whatever else is in there. So if I'm a healthy person and I say, what should I do? Well, I'm going to go to the fruit shop. If I'm an unhealthy person, what should I do? I'm going to go to Macca's. So a primary question or a question to move towards when we're having challenging moments is to quickly go, who do I want to be now? Or what position do I want to take on this? With the awareness that we really want it solved. We really want it to be better for everybody, because we can say, oh, well, stuff it, I'm not going to lose sleep over that. But if you've got to say, I'm not going to lose sleep over that, generally, not always, but generally, if you're in a heated situation, you actually are going to lose sleep over it. Like, we're not immune to the relationships we're in. So I really think there has to be this awareness to have an eagerness to have a good outcome, not necessarily to be the solver, but work out what your role could be to allow the solution to unfold and allow it to be good for everybody.
Take this in a work role, right? So, you know, let's just pick a career or a position that somebody is in. Say you're, you know, head of accounting for a company, you know, bookkeeper or whatever it might be. Can you talk about an example of what you're thinking within that context?
Well, I'll give an easy one that might be more personal at first, is that when we go see a doctor. So when we go to see a doctor, often people go there and go, can you please fix me? This is my problem. Can you fix me? Now, not to be a hero here, but this is one where I noticed in my own life. I didn't notice I was doing this, but when I was going to the doctor, I was going, can you please teach me? So I was going in to the doctor as a student, not necessarily as a guinea pig or as a little, you know, Oliver, please, sir, can I have some more? Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, because if I've got a broken bone, I need to be fixed, but I also would like to know at the same time. I'd like to learn. So if I'm in a workplace and say I'm a bookkeeping role and I've got a boss that continuously bombards me things or changes the goalposts, well, what we can do is we can start to throw our hands up in the air and go, oh, this is ridiculous. Oh my God, the stuff that I put up around here, like, you know, I'm just a mushroom, you know, just keep me in the dark, feed me crap. And that position that you're taking on that isn't necessarily helping anybody in any way. It's not resolving it. And what's going to happen is the same thing is going to happen over and over and over again. So what we're really looking to do is to think about how would I like this place to run? And then therefore, who would I need to be to start to begin that ripple effect of it moving into that? And I learned this a lot from a couple of key people that I hang out with, because I know that anytime we've had, say, conflict or challenge for a better term, is that they're just so driven to go, no, it's good. We've got to make it so that it works out really well. And so I've started to do that. And in the journey of doing that, I've learned the language is positioning. I love the language. It makes perfect sense to me. And I just wanted to share it. But does that make sense, that idea that how we're responding to this? I think in the past we've called it attitude. In the 80s, we called it your attitude. But then everybody only had two positions in response to attitude. You either got a bad attitude or you got a good attitude. But that's really limiting. There's so many other roles you could take or positions you could take on the same situation that could work. Because sometimes it's not necessarily to have a good attitude. That sounds like we should just smile through the crap. That's definitely not what we're saying here.
With this project, right, what do you think of when you think of positioning? Are you thinking of stuff like...
What do you mean with risking failure?
Yeah, like are you thinking of stuff like where we have conversations, oh, should we edit that out? And we're like, nah, we just need to not do that as much as we can because it's just about putting ourselves out there. Is that a positioning?
It is positioning, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit. But, oh, you remember last week where you totally... shafted me. Well, you said before we got on air, which you weren't meant to tell everybody, before we got on air, Mark said, you'd have more fun than you've ever had in your entire life. Now, and you said, oh my God, like more pressure. I was like, no. I was trying to position myself to go, oh, I'm just going to have a great time. And, you know, granted, you know, you didn't see that coming, but it's interesting when you say, how's the positioning work moment to moment for this project? It really is hopping on air and choosing who we want to be. And not having to think about it. And I know that when we first started this project, you were like, well, you know, you were aware of wanting to find your voice and can I do this? And really what you were doing was moving into a new position. What are you laughing at?
I'm just laughing about this little statement of like, find your voice and can I do this? And then it's like just having this remembering of like as much fun as we've had in your entire life. Record, go.
Well, I may not have positioned myself in a way that was very helpful for you, but I thought it was helpful at the time.
Yeah, I was sort of the teach me, you know, that was my position.
Oh, right. Okay. So I've learned that this week before we got on everybody. Okay, Mick, we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this. And it was great. Yeah, and you're doing great, Mick. But that is a good example of where we're not really trying to position ourselves, say, in the market necessarily. We're definitely trying to just be ourselves in a way that helps other people. And that does determine what things we talk about and the sort of risks we take for sure. But then I think if we go to moment, you and I need to work out who we can be to help the other one just unfold in their nature. You know, like when you just go silent and just leave me hanging, that's a poor positioning on your part. Very poor positioning.
I'd say it's brilliant, but
it's not brilliant. You listen back to the last everybody, Mick, he emailed me first thing this morning when I wake up and I'm drowsy and I read it and say, oh, the end of last week's episode's really funny. And I'm like, so I listened back to it in my sleepy state. I was like, no, that's pretty much how I remembered it. You just leaving me hanging and me just going, okay, Mick, I'll just wind this show up. So, but it is a good example of positioning. And I think another way that it's interesting to apply this or another to get your head around it is who we are being in relation to our kids and our partners and the people we love, our parents. And yeah, parents particularly, like we can sometimes, as you know, our parents are getting older, Mick, and sometimes we forget that how much they just love us and all the crap gets in the way and we get caught up in that crap and we got to go, well, and our partners as well. Like if that's the person that we love the most that we've chosen to be with, it's interesting to go, well, am I being ferociously loving towards them? Or do I nitpick and niggle, or do I just take them for granted? And if you're positioning yourself as somebody that just has expectations of your partner just to do this and like, oh no, they're always going to be around. They just love me. We're together. This is what it's like. One, you can't be sure of that. And two, is that the kind of relationship you want? Now, I'm not saying that to be on a soapbox to preach. I'm just to point out, how are you positioning yourself? What position are you taking? What attitude are you taking? In all our relationships, anywhere there's a bit of struggle, a little bit of tension in our heart, a little bit of stress. And it's an interesting way to view it. And I think there's merit in thinking about some key situations and actually jotting down on paper, because I think that brings you a certain level of clarity. You've sort of committed. But just going, all right, how do I want to position myself in this relationship? You go, I want to be this person or that person. And we're not manipulating. We're not lying. We're not hiding any aspects of ourselves. For example, if you're in a conflict with somebody and you see them as a client or as an opponent or as an inconvenience, and we go, hang on, how would I handle this if I was their friend? So you're the same person. You're just taking a different approach to it. So there's no misleading or hiding or the like, unless you've got another agenda. But if your agenda is for this to work out well so it's in everybody's benefit and that we all feel good, then that's a sincere agenda and a certain aspect of you comes out.
I like what you said about the little things, but just how small they are, you know, how sometimes just I can't quite think of an example, but when you're in the middle of something and you get like an interruption or somebody else is doing something they're involved in and it's conflicting, and sometimes we can tend to, when we switch out of our mode and you're trying to tell them you're in my way or what are you doing? Like, you're making too much noise or whatever, that sometimes it's like it's that stuff when we've like stepped out of our thing that we're doing. Sometimes I think we step literally out of what we're doing and we take on this different persona. And I catch myself doing that all the time. And I have that's the stuff, like that's the moment when I have to really try to remember, you know, you got to try to keep all of that stuff in mind to have those little moments be the same as everything else. And I always took through this old statement. I've had a few people sort of say it's a bad one actually to me before, but I think it was something you and I used to talk about a while back. How you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah, that's what I said a couple of episodes ago. Yeah. Which I got that from Andrea Smith, and I don't know where she got it from, but she was the one that taught it to me via Facebook on one of her Facebook rants. It was very valuable. But continue though, yeah.
Well, no, this goes back to before Facebook for me, like in terms of, I think it was something we were talking about, like when I was living in Australia. So that means 10, 12 years ago. This is way back. But either way, I just think that's an interesting statement into itself, because I've found myself using that as a way to, for me, to define when something isn't quite right. You know, when somebody is reacting a certain way on something and I'm trying to like push through that. And then I sometimes hit these moments where I'm like, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. And if that's how that gets handled, then chances are that's how a lot of stuff is going to get handled, and maybe it's better to talk about whether it's the right match or not and not, you know, how to do this better.
Yeah, that's so relevant, so awesome. I have done the same thing in my world where I started to notice some areas of my life where I wasn't happy consistently. I said wasn't happy, I just wasn't having the growth I wanted to have. So a few things came up that provoked it, and somebody said, is it possible that you're handling those areas of your life the same way as you handle your business? I was like, well, there's, all right, interesting, because how you handle anything is how you handle everything. So I wrote down the key characteristics or the nature of how my work is, where I'm positioned, like what position I take and how those relationships work and how I make decisions and how I use resources and where the profit is and where the expenses are. And when I say expenses, I don't mean like the expenses are in office materials, but I might go, my expenses are in my environment or the suit that I wear, say. I'm just making this up. Then I started to go, well, those characteristics, that decision-making process, is that the same decision-making process and the characteristics that I'm using in other areas of my life, my health and fitness, my relationships, my finances, my personal like goals, my hobbies, my creativity, the projects I'm working on the weekend? And I realized that essentially I'm using the same nature. There were some certain characteristics. An easy one is that usually when I go into an environment, I'm the expert. Now, if I go into, say, into some time, and I'm going to spend some time being painting and being creative, I can't position myself as an expert there because, on one, I'm not. But then also, then it can stop me from, because I may not get it exactly right. Or if I go into a situation with my health and fitness, then if I'm always an expert, then I'm not necessarily very good at taking the instruction from somebody. Or I'm only going to listen if you're more of an expert than me, which is not unreasonable. But my point is that the characteristics are playing out in multiple environments. So therefore, how we position ourselves in anything might be how we position ourselves in everything. And that's big.
Yeah. I think,
That's about now when your mum stirs a cup of tea or your dog barks. Anytime we get to something big, you know, you just like, you know, find somewhere to break it. You're just not comfortable with the intensity and the heaviness. You're like, too much. I've got to make a fart joke or something. But do you see what I mean about the positioning in everything? Like, it just keeps transferring across.
Yeah, I do. I think that I've seen that myself. And sometimes maybe it's easier to identify it when you're vulnerable in a particular thing, like interaction, say, with particularly outside of work, or maybe uncommon relationships related to work or uncommon relationships in your personal life, like in terms of, I don't know, like how do you behave with your accountant? Somebody you see every now and then. And then so like, how do you interact with that person? And what does that tell you about how you might be interacting with everything. So if you give me enough time to think, Dobbo, I can spit this stuff out. I can keep up with you a bit. Just hold on. Let me go get my dog.
I can't believe you're only allocating a few hours to work every day with the speed of thought that you're using. By the end of the day, you've turned your computer on. So, I think that's an interesting one, what you say about the accountant, though, because sometimes we see people as a service provider and we're like, well, they just need to do this. I just need them to do that. Completely unaware that if we see them like that, then they respond like that. But also, because we're just asking them to do a task, we may not be open to what we might need to do to be able to make their job or not easier, but for them to be able to do a great job. Like, it's very common for the things in our life that we don't want to deal with, for us to say outsource it or just get somebody else to do it or with some instruction. But because we don't take it seriously, we don't really give them enough instruction. We don't give them enough information. And as a result, then they underperform. And then we go, oh my God, they can't do anything. And then we get frustrated, but we started the process.
You know, on top of that, I think sometimes we tend to see when somebody is, I'm not going to say not positioned well, but, you know, when the positioning that somebody has is not quite right, but everything about them is right. I don't have an example, but I did have somebody recently we were working with that I was working alongside of, and it was a little bit too much stuff for them to keep up with, but they were actually really good with what they do. And I found myself asking, should I just sort of pull back and say, we don't need as much of this, and just kind of balance out the workload so that, you know, because this is another company and, you know, just a couple of people, or should I just be upfront and say, you shouldn't bother doing this because you're so good at that, or you're trying to be a resource to something that, you know, isn't really who you're best at being. I was wondering, well, is it my job to say these things? And then even bigger is like, who's not saying that to me?
Yeah, that's so true. I think, though, the reason that somebody does that is because they're having a conversation in their head that says, I should, or this is the right way. I want to get it right once in my life.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think the thing that was going through in my head in this particular instance was like, you don't need to do those things. That doesn't need to be part of what you offer, because it's just, I can see it's a burden for you. So why do it?
But when they're going, I'm going to keep chipping away at it, there's really some series of hoops that they've been told, if you jump through these hoops in your life, then you're a good person, then you're valuable. And they come from our parents and the community. You know, if you look a certain way, if you have this kind of car and this kind of house and you've got it all together, and people go, oh, they seem to be doing great. You know, we want to keep up with the Joneses and we want to present a certain way. And our parents always do that to us. Everybody's parents, it's just the nature of life, say, well, this is what we've learnt is success, and we're going to teach you that this is what you should do as well. So sometimes we say it's about manners, or sometimes it's about finishing something, or sometimes it's about doing it perfect and not stuffing anything up, and sometimes it's about winning, or sometimes it's about trying. Typically, the result of that is some point in your life, you get to a point where you're continuing to persist with something that's not really your nature because you think that you should, or this is how it must be done, and you're wanting to go, I can do this. See, I'm a good person. I'm lovable. I've succeeded. When the truth is, it's a silly hoop, and it's really not the full expression of yourself. And if you put less effort into a different area, you'd be able to achieve far more. But we have this thing, oh, but I shouldn't do that. No, that's not really valuable. That's not important.
There's also that, obviously, the learning process. And I, you know, continue to go through that and have definitely gone through these same things where I was like, I really wish somebody had just interrupted me and said, just stop doing this, so that I didn't spend a year trying to offer services and do things that just weren't really cut out for me. You know, you obviously need to do those things so you can learn what it is you do want to do. You know, it's that difference between that and positioning, I guess. And is it the same thing?
Well, positioning would be able to filter you through it, because you would go, what position do I want to take? Like, if you've got all these tasks that you feel like you should do, we talk about this person, let's just call them Tom for the sake of it. You know, I'm just inventing a name. So Tom is trying to do all these things, and you observing Tom and saying, Tom, you don't need to do this. You've got a natural strength over here. You could have this kind of role in the company, or you could have this kind of role as a business owner, or this kind of role as a dad. And they're going, no, I just want to get this and this and this done. Well, Tom's, he could be naturally go, and instinctively he could be a student where he's just always listening to the people around him. He could position himself as the know-all. He could position himself as the workaholic or the I will get it right. And in the process, that will change whether or not he can hear what's going on around him or not. You know, I think I spoke about James another time where he signs off his emails as student of life. Now, that's an interesting position because he still contributes and he teaches the people around him, but fundamentally, he's listening to life. I think the positioning is like a filter.
Yeah, I think I've got a little bit of an example, actually. So obviously, we get cold winters here in Maine, right? We've talked about this. You get snow. And so you have snow plowing. I had somebody that I worked with who used to plow, and he just had, I think, a rental property, he had his own house, and had some other stuff as well. And so he just had a plow that he would put on the front of the truck, and whenever it was snowing, he was out plowing. But he'd do this, you know, before work and after work, and he'd just sort of fit it into schedule. But he was really cheerful about it. So he's the kind of person that you would be driving. I was driving actually with this guy on the highway out of Boston one day, and there was like a BMW stuck spinning wheels on the side of the road, and there's just a line of traffic, and he just pulls out in the emergency lane, drives like 20 cars up to where this BMW is, and then he just starts plowing like all the snow out around this person, and then just plows him a whole path all the way back to the exit so the guy can get back on the road and get on his way. And he just keeps, and we just keep on driving because he's the only guy that had a plow within the, you know, area. So he just did it. So the kind of person that will just see somebody shoveling their driveway and be like, here, I'll plow it for you. And he'll just do it and take off. Now, then I've worked with some contractors that are site work contractors. And when the winter comes, they'd get behind schedule because it was snowing and they'd have to be out plowing. So they were trying to do site work, meaning, you know, excavation and doing all this other stuff. But then whenever it would snow, they'd have to stop doing that so they could go do plowing. And you'd always feel like saying, we need you to be a site guy. We don't need you to plow other people's stuff because we just need you to be here. And this is stressing you out every time it snows, so just stop doing it. But that's not a simple solution because, you know, you got to still make money in the wintertime. But I guess the point being is like, one person was doing it because that's just how they serve. And the other person is sort of like trying to juggle it in, and it becomes a stress point. And they just keep doing it until they realize that I'm not making any money plowing, or I got to change something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, I think the other part that is relevant to this, which I was going to mention earlier, was that if we go back to your other example, because it's consistent, is that, like, with both examples are consistent, is that when that person's not doing that task, and I said, well, there's a whole lot of hoops they're trying to jump through, what people end up trying to do is they end up trying to get everything right and perfect. The reason they're doing that, for example, the guy on the snowplow, is that they've got two jobs and they would like to do both well so that they can please both parties. And in the process, they really frustrate everybody and they're stressed out themselves, because what they're doing is they're trying to jump through too many hoops. It's like what the perfectionist does. They go, I'm going to jump through all these hoops, and if I get them all right, I will be perfect. I'll know I'm a good person and people will love me. Really, another question to ask ourselves is, how are we positioning ourselves to let love in? So this guy on the snowplow, hang on, is this actually helping your relationships? Are you feeling more love? Because if you jump through that hoop, and you do it perfectly, then you should feel loved by the measure that you've got. Or you should feel better, or you should feel good, or you should feel fulfilled. That would be surely that's the outcome. The outcome is not to feel crap. So then we go, the way I'm living my life, the position I'm taking, and when I say position, I'm saying, when I see all these challenges in front of me, say all the things that could be done, like we'd be on site or plow in the snow and then getting home in time for my kids, what position am I taking? Am I taking the busy person, or am I taking the position of the overwhelmed person, or the position of the thinker that strategically works out how to do it, or the position of the father and the dad that says, no, I'm a dad, and so therefore it's time for me to let go of this? Or am I taking myself a position as the reliable employee or contractor that delivers? So when we work out what position we want to take to solve it, or even the friend, and say, if I'm a friend in this situation, I'm going to start talking to other people around me as a friend going, mate, I can't get to your place to plow this afternoon. But really, it comes back to this love thing. And I know I harp on about this every bloody episode, but it really comes down to we just want to feel good. And we think if we do all these things, it will make us feel good. But there comes a point where we bump into something, it's an uncomfortable situation, and we don't know how to deal with it. So we can often gravitate towards victim, or we can gravitate towards like the stubborn person or the strength, when really we want to go, well, can I position myself a slightly different way to navigate this so it feels good for everyone?
Yeah, I think I get you now. I mean, I understood what you're talking about, but I think it makes a little more sense. I was just actually thinking about that kind of person that is the, oh, don't worry, I'll save the day type person that waits until things are screwed up and then they step in. And, you know, when you've had a boss that's sort of like that, they just let you do things wrong so they can step in and fix it. And
yeah, because they want to be the hero. They want to be the strength. You're so stilly, let me show you. And then I feel good, but they're really being a dick.
Exactly. And what I get with what you're saying is whether that is leading to a good outcome for them and leading to love, as you say.
Yeah, well, all parties are trying to look for love, yes. So you can see how it comes back. And that's why this topic's a big topic. So obviously, like I just dumped this on you today. You said, what are we covering? And I said, positioning. You're like, don't know what it is. Let's do it, which is brave, right? Which is a great way to position yourself, actually. But it is big when you really think this through and you start to apply it to situations in your life. And when people are listening, they're probably thinking through particular interactions they've had and with work and family and sport and the like. It takes a while for this stuff to really soak in and to master it. So in the meetings I've had this week and tomorrow, it's accidentally, it happens sometimes, it's accidentally become a bit of a theme. But what we'll do with these guys is we'll work out multiple ways to position themselves in certain situations. And then we'll revisit that sort of monthly and just see how they're going. Are they starting to go to it a little bit more instinctively? Is it sort of like a, it's literally like when you get a new feature on your computer, you didn't know that button did something. And then every now and then you start going, oh, I can do that button now. And I can do that button until it becomes part of your nature. So that's what you're really trying to do. Speaking of positioning, the risk list, Mick.
Ooh, topical issue, Dava.
Topical. We're getting some feedback from people that are a little bit unhappy with what the number they've got. Some people are very happy. If you're in the top 10, they're all like, oh, it's great. Other people are going, like my sister Jo and Catherine and a few others, and Joe's going to come on. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about this risk list possibly next week. But they were like, hang on, but we've been mentioned in episodes. I'm like, yeah, but mentioned in episodes is not the same as actually us knowing that you're a regular listener. So, like, the risk list is about when did we find out that you were listening, not just as a token polite, oh, I listened to an episode just to make you feel good about your show, Dobbo, but, you know, it's become part of your nature. So, there are a few more people. We'll update the risk list, so you got to go to the webpage to check it out. But, guys, you're a special person. The numbers means that you're involved in the community. You don't have to see it as a ranking on your self-worth. You're still important people. We love you. Catherine, I love you. Joe, I love you. Strutty, you know, the feedback was good. It's not really love that I'm feeling towards you right now, but, you know, we love you, essentially. So, listeners, if you want to be on the risk list, it's not good enough just to like the webpage because everybody does that. You send around a webpage, all your friends just like it for the sake of it. I think we've got like 33 likes, Mick. That's the greatest scope of our friendships. But it's not enough just to like a page. We need to go, you need to go, what's my number? And you need to get in touch and go, what's my number? And then we'll progressively build up the risk list. So it's not a status symbol, people.
Yeah, it's just meaning it's not enough for us to know. Like you just have to let us know so then we'll be...
Well, if I found out, like... I was talking to Julia the other day and she said, oh, yeah, I was listening to your episode the other day. Now, I didn't know she was a listener. I'm like, oh, Julia, you just got yourself a number. And she's like, what? Now, she hasn't got to that episode yet. See, that's great. Like, it was the first time I knew that she was listening. So that's what you got to do, people. We don't know who's listening. All we know is that there is consistently about 250 people per episode listening. We can do that by the stats. Sometimes there's more. Some episodes have been downloaded like over 400 times now. So that's the plan. All right. So the risk list, people. We love you. We love you. It's not a status symbol. If anything, it's a status. If you're even on the list, that makes you a better person.
And if you've got some web page examples, then throw them up and add to Strutty's little addition to the Facebook comments there. Hey, you got to get to a meeting by now, mate.
Yes, I actually do. And I'm not positioning myself well to get there on time. The good thing is if you walk in sort of humble and apologetic, you're okay. Although there was one time, in all honesty, I woke up to go somewhere, had to be in Bendigo, 2 hours away. I woke up at like 6 o'clock to get there, leave at 7 or 6:30 to be there by like whatever, 8:30 for a 9 o'clock presentation. The bell goes at 6 a.m. in the morning. It doesn't stop. The bell we've got here is like a gong. Like it wakes up like the whole neighborhood, right? Doesn't stop buzzing. I run down in a towel out of the shower, soaking wet, badge in my face. We have a warrant to search these premises. And 20 cops storm the house and they come over the back fence. They are at every door. There is no escaping. And I said to them, guys, I don't think we're who you're looking for, but you can come in. And I'm there. I'm just in my towel. It barely covers anything. And but mind you, they said, "Is that? Do you have a concealed weapon?" I said, yes, I do. But that's a true story. So then I eventually, I was so late, they went through with they just took our names and details and went on forever. So then I turn up late and I've got to explain that I'm a half hour late to a significant presentation to about 300 people and because I had a warrant to have our house searched and people just didn't, they didn't believe me. They just thought I was making it up and I was trying to tell the truth. I had a real reason. I was late because of this. So, because it was such a good, you know, story, I'm thinking of sort of keeping it up my sleeve for next time I'm really late and go, warrant, search the premises. And I'll go, what were they looking for? Weapons.
Well, let us know how it goes today, man. I think you should try it out right now.
Oh, can't believe I say this stuff. All right. I will let you know. That's a true story, though. Damon was living with us back then. Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to go.
Well, have a good meeting, mate. Have a good rest of the day. And, hey, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. It's always a pleasure. Chat to you later, world. Bye.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.